On America Can We Talk, I talk about election integrity, border security, healthcare freedom, race relations, energy and tax policy, education policy, free speech and assembly, freedom of religion, and all other issues that touch on the God-given right of every American to life, liberty, and the pursuit of their version of happiness. Stay tuned. You preach your tolerance, but lecture me. Is there no end to your own hypocrisy? Your God is power, you have no shame. Your only interest is political gain. You hide your eyes and refuse to listen. You play your game.
Coming up next, America Can We Talk with your host, Debbie Georgiatos.
And hello and welcome to America Can We Talk. I'm Debbie Georgiatos. I've been saying this whole campaign season that there are so many wonderful candidates stepping up to run for office. I mean, more than I can remember in past times. In fact, we had a guest on the show 4 weeks ago or so, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, was talking about the amazing number of people stepping up to run in primaries against county party chairs, against incumbent members of Congress, members of the Texas, Texas State House, State Senate. There is really a palpable rise of patriotic inspiration in this country, and people are stepping up who haven't before. I'm going to tease next Tuesday show to tell you that I just came back from a meeting in Las Vegas with Turning Point USA, TPUSA, Charlie Kirk's group. They are on fire to do everything they can to make the 2024 election successful for Republicans. I believe my listeners know I'm running for RNC committeewoman from the state of Texas. Blessed to have TPUSA endorse that campaign. And they brought a bunch of people to Las Vegas for a two-day conference about how to save America, what we're going to do. They brought the people they endorse, county party chairs in swing districts and swing states that matter, people on the RNC, kind of the more fiery, patriotic members of the RNC. Not that they're all patriotic. People who see we've got serious problems in our country, RNC members and candidates, had a great 2 days. And I'll just say, the thing that struck me more than anything else was the room was just on fire with passion, energy, just a sense that we see America's in trouble and we want to think of everything we can do to save it. It was just very inspiring. I'll tell you more next Tuesday. What I decided to do for today's show, it's the first time on of all these Thursday shows, I have three guests. I'm going to interview them sequentially. And the reason is I want to share with you, our listeners, these people who are just stepping up in amazing, bold ways to run for office. And if any of you have ever run for office, you know it's exhausting, it's expensive, it's emotionally it's emotionally draining, time-consuming, and so you have to make an investment to decide you really care to do that. So we have three guests today. We have Clint Doris, we'll speak with in a moment, candidate for U.S. Congress for Congressional District 12. It's actually an empty seat right now. The incumbent announced she's not running again. Shelley Luther, who is a candidate for Texas State House, House District 62, against an incumbent. And Darren Meiss, candidate for Texas State House, House District 67. So talk to all three of them about why it is they'd step up and make a run like this and what the issues are that they're facing. So we'll start with Mr. Clinton Doris, and I will tell you that I read his resume this morning, and I was trying to highlight the important parts, but then the entire page was yellow, and so it's really hard to even tell you in a summary way this gentleman's resume. But again, this is a U.S. congressional seat in the state of Texas. It's an empty seat, Congressional District 12, and this is in Texas. We have a primary coming up very quickly, March 5th, and I'm going to introduce very briefly Clinton Doris to tell you about him, he's a former Senior Executive Service HOE member. He's the Deputy Chief of Special Programs, Chief Technology Officer and Innovation Office, et cetera, for the U.S. Space Force. We'll hear a bit about U.S. Space Force, which was a Donald Trump idea, just a very forward-thinking and wonderful idea. He has an engineering degree. He served in the U.S. Army from 1989 to 2003. He was part of a six-man long-range surveillance team during Operation Desert Storm, an Apache troop commander. He worked for the Boeing Company, increasing and optimizing the operational utility of the International Space Station, which is an extraordinarily important thing. He began working with NASA, a program manager of the Human Lunar Lander. He's director of special projects office at NASA, Johnson Space Center, and detailed to Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence as a special advisor to Lieutenant General John Kozoil, may not be pronouncing his name correctly. So he has just a vast resume of experience as a soldier, as a patriot, as a fighter, a long time in the U.S. military. An extraordinary experience in his work life. And he's running, as I say, for this open seat. So we're going to find out why. So first, I'd love to welcome to the show, Mr. Clinton Doris.
Thank you very much for having me.
So I'll just, you know, I told you before we start, this story, this resume, you could apply for a lot of jobs. I would think that would be and be wonderfully successful. In fact, I didn't even read many, many wonderful positions you've held and or are holding or have held. So why would someone like with a resume like this, very successful in life, why would you run for U.S. Congress?
Well, I think it's because we find ourselves as a nation in one of the most dangerous times of our life, right? We've got the federal government attacking our everyday citizens, whether it's Catholics now or evidently extremists. We've got folks being rounded up by the armed FBI if they're out praying in front of an abortion clinic, right? We also have the largest threat we've ever seen from an adversary named China, right? Both in space and in cyber. We have 400,000 Chinese nationals that we educate every year in our higher education, and that is creating an opportunity where they're actually starting to defeat us in technology from a military perspective and from a civilian perspective. They're also using, China's using the cartel in Mexico as a proxy, right? And they are killing 100,000 U.S. citizens a year with fentanyl. And by the way, if you take the losses that we had in the Korean War and in Vietnam, it would not equal 100,000, right? So over the course of probably a decade or so between those two. And so when you're inside, I was a two-star general equivalent in the United States Space Force. I hold 500 different unacknowledged clearances or spatial access programs. I see the problem from the highest level in our government. And I was working on solving our number one national security threat in the United States Space Force. And I literally had a three-star general ask me what the return on investment was for solving it.
What did you say, by the way?
Well, after a very long pregnant pause, right, and trying to maintain my composure, I'm just an Army guy, right? I said, well, how about your grandchildren and mine aren't speaking Mandarin Chinese, right? And that was a pretty absurd question. But it made me, it was kind of a slap in the face to the old saying, you can't solve the problem with the same people that created it. And so that evening, I told my wife, you know, I know this is going to sound crazy, but one day we might have to run for Congress because of the power of the purse, right? So a lot of people are, you know, we have the choice in Congress whether or not we fund everything. And I think we've forgotten that largely as a nation. So to wrap up that first question, there's only one candidate in this race, right, that's fought China in cyber and in space. And now I've been talking about this for months. China can shut down our power grid at their time and choosing. They can jam our satellites in space at their time and choosing. When that happens, our entire financial district, whether it's buying fuel at the gas station or paying for a coffee downstairs in the building, you can have cash. Guess what? The cash register won't work. So if they jam our systems, our entire financial district is shut down. Just think about the daisy chain effect of that. So I've fought China in space and in cyber. I've fought the terrorists in the terrorists across the globe, and I've fought the cartel in Mexico, Central and South America. In fact, unfortunately, about a decade or so ago, I lost four people fighting counter-narcotics in Central South America dressed like I'm dressed. All for Uncle Sam. So I've spent 30 years serving this nation in uniform. In fact, carrying this crazy Texas flag into combat, right? And it saved my life. As a civil servant and in industry, I know how to defeat the bureaucracy. I've been doing it for 30 years. This just happens to be the next most important mission. I should have my head examined for sure, and I'll tell the camera. No one should run for politics if you don't feel called by the Lord. Because it's a fool's errand otherwise. Amen. It's as far as I'm concerned, it's a demotion to me. I've had plenty of titles in my career. I've made way more money than what I will earn in Congress. And I don't need it for stature, right? And unfortunately, we continue to elect people, and this is a GOP problem, not a conservative problem, but we continue to elect people because they've been dutiful members of the party instead of based on what their experience is that they can take to DC or to Austin and help make good decisions. I'm just the crazy person willing to go take it to the government.
I don't think it's crazy at all. And actually, I meant to say introducing you. Aren't you also a I don't know if you're a Baptist deacon. Am I remembering this correctly?
I am. This is correct. Yes, I was ordained as a deacon back in the early 2000s when we were. My wife is an aerospace engineer, and we were both working at Boeing in the space program. And I was ordained probably in 2003 or something like that.
It is a wide and deep background you offer, and I will say, so you're overqualified for the job.
That's probably true.
It probably is true. But, you know, it's really interesting. You made this point about people running for office because it's kind of their term within the party system. Mm-hmm. They've held other jobs, and now it's this next job. A lot of that is viewed as wisdom or kind of party insider. Everyone understands how the party works. You have to do this and then this and this, and this is how you, you know, move up as though it's a promotion versus who sees the challenges America faces and who best can articulate them, who can stand up and explain what the problem is, why we must make a change. And so I love that you're saying that very overtly. The party is not supposed to govern. The party has a lot of jobs they have to do. They're not supposed to govern the people and choose the successor, and we all just salute and say, okay.
Yes, ma'am. We've a lot of people in the party have bought into an unspoken or unwritten lie that's if you want to be in politics one day, you know, behind the secret door there's an escalator, and when you get on the escalator and you get to the top, it's your turn. The problem is there's no qualification for the escalator.
Yeah, I want to ask you actually, though, about these things you listed that must happen in Washington. And they're all, it's accurate, everything you're describing. We've had people on this show describing in just great detail the threat China faces to poses to America in all sorts of levels.
Yes, ma'am.
And how we don't have a cogent response from our country. We don't fight mm-hmm. back. We maybe have testimony before some committee in Congress, and they say, yeah, this is really terrible, and nothing changes. So that is, I mean, why does Congress not respond and take action? Well, because I do think millions of Americans see these issues. Yeah. Why is it we have a Congress that is so, a GOP majority, slim as it is, that is so not responsive?
Well, I think there's a couple things. Number one, the executive branch, right? When we talk about the bloat of the government, it's not the Supreme Court bloat, and it's not the legislative branch. It's the executive branch. So if you can imagine that over the course of, let's say, the last few decades, the executive branch is just growing and growing and growing and growing. And from an oversight perspective on the Hill, the legislative branch, they don't have the people to oversight and insight as they should. What happens, though, is that the executive branch very clearly tells Congress what they want them to know, like your children. They tell you what they want you to know. They don't tell you what you need to know. So I won't say that they're lying to Congress, but they aren't telling them the Paul Harvey version of the story. So it's very difficult as a legislator to do good at legislation without that knowledge base.
I'll say that's fair, but I would add to that. I think that the Leviathan that is the executive branch and the massive bureaucracy in Washington, they do let Congress know only what they want mm-hmm. them to know. But in addition to that, Congress does have constitutional authority to cut budgets and I think what actually happens is in complex issues, people who are elected by the people and must go back to their district and explain why you should elect me again, it's easier for them to say, well, we passed a law, we said XYZ, and that's this agency over here, they're doing that. So it really allows members of Congress to pass the buck to unaccountable bureaucrats and never take responsibility. They're the elected ones and they actually fund or don't fund those agencies.
Yes, ma'am. So I think when we talk about taking action, we, as I mentioned earlier, we have forgotten about the power of the purse. My own Congresswoman, Kay Granger, is the chairwoman of appropriations. Everybody loves to bloviate about whether we should impeach Mayorkas. What will impeaching Mayorkas do? Nothing. They will replace Mayorkas. What should be happening is that we withhold their funding. If I go to Congress, I can assure you, I'm going to be pushing for the Education Department to be no more, the $80 billion a year we waste there, and DHS is going to lose some money. Because I assure you, we can get Mayorkas' attention by withholding his budget. Now, it's a great, it makes us feel good to impeach somebody. That does not solve the problem.
Yeah, I will tell you, the impeachment, part of the reason I think it's happening now, it is a way that members of Congress, mm-hmm. because they're hearing from the public, they're saying, the border is wide open, please do something, and this looks like, okay, we're doing something. We're trying to replace him.
To
and I'm
your
not against
point.
That point.
I'm not against it either.
He needs to go, but you're right. Someone else just like him will come into that
it's
spot.
It's passing the buck to the point you just made. What I'm talking about is, let's stop making show in front of the TV and let's start doing the work of the American public. Even our own state, as much as we brag about securing the southern border, we're not securing the southern border.
Oh, yes. I was going to say, sing it to me. We are not securing the
right.
southern border. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, we have this great show today where I'm just very excited about all the candidates we have here. And I don't want our time to run out before you can tell this
yes,
story,
ma'am.
Which is on your website. First of all, for our listeners, please go to, for this first candidate we're speaking with today, Clint Doris, which is D-O-R-R-I-S, ClintDorisForCongress.com, and check out their campaign, read his position, read his more of his resume. I skimmed the surface. It was a long introduction. It was still a skimming the surface. So read about him. His positions on issues, you can endorse him there, and you can most certainly donate to the campaign, because as I always tell you, it costs money to run campaigns. It just isn't free. So I urge you to check out his website. But you have a story about your service and why you carry that Texas flag around, and everyone in Texas, okay, tell you our quickest story. We moved to Texas in the year 2000. I did not grow up here, and we took the kids the first year we were here down to the beach just to see Padre Island. My husband and I, neither of us grew up here, and we had the three kids in the car. We're driving along, and we saw these college students on spring break at the beach, and they jump out of their car, and they're putting all the beach stuff down, and they got out an enormous Texas flag and planted it in the beach. And, you know, I'd never seen anybody in my life mm-hmm. plant a state flag, and they were all like, woo-hoo, you know, yahooing. People feel that way about Texas. I feel that way about Texas now.
Of course.
So tell us about that Texas flag.
Well, only if I can tell you one other thing afterwards.
Sure.
But so long story short, after a bunch of unfortunate events on a mission that we were going into Iraq before the ground war ever started, we're supposed to have 3 Black Hawk helicopters. They refused to do the mission because it was too dangerous. We were supposed to have 2 Apache helicopters. They refused to do the mission because it was too dangerous. And eventually we ended up with 1 Black Hawk crew and 1 Apache crew. And the Apache guy looked like John Wayne. He was 6'4", had 2 pearl grip handled 45s on his on his hips. And he had a big stogie. And he goes, well, Prophet, I guess we'll do it, right? And then eventually he said, haven't you guys ever thought of a different line of profession? I mean, it's just like out of a movie. But so we roll in. Our primary landing zone has bad guys. They're shooting at us. So we go to our secondary. We land. It's in the Euphrates floodplain, right? So that we were in mud up to our calves. When the Black Hawk hit the ground, you move really fast. They come in very, very hot. Well, they ended up creating like a 4-foot divot in the ground. I fell in it. And as they were taken off, my rucksack was stuck on the floor of this helicopter. And my team leader pulls me out of the trench there. And they're supposed to go off and hold off a number of miles while I pull up the GPS. GPS was brand new. We had 1 for 6 guys. And we had $50,000 bounties on our heads. So we're in the middle of bad guy territory. Just 6 of us, you get in a gun battle that far into, you know, 150 or so miles in, you're in trouble. So the plan was, make sure we're in the right place. And if not, they come pick us up and put us in the right place. Well, we end up 3 miles away from where we're supposed to be in this deep of mud, right? Calf deep mud. And I call the pilot back, hey, brother, you put us in the wrong place. His response was, I hope you're safe. Best of luck. And they fly away. So now we're walking 3 miles, 6 guys. Anybody on a camel, horse, or 4-wheel drive could find us, right? We end up in our hide site, bad guys all over the place. And some Apaches start coming up. And I end up 50 feet away from an Apache helicopter, so close I can literally see the eyes of the guy flying it. There's 6 of us. We're like, what are we going to do to not get shot up? And of course, we didn't look like soldiers. We have sterile uniforms on. And there's like 200 bad guys only a football field or less away from us. And I carried this flag in the clamshell top of my rucksack, just like any dumb young Texan. So I grabbed this flag and I held it across my chest as I'm laying in the dirt. And you could see like the gears of this guy's mind trying to process, wait a second, I see bad guys, I see people I don't recognize, and I see a Texas flag. And eventually his eyes kind of went like, what is this? Gives us a big thumbs up and flies away to take care of the bad guys. We almost got shot up by 30 millimeter, you know, Gatling gun or chain gun on that. So I carry this with me. I've carried it to Afghanistan. I carried it all over the globe. Some people call it a prop. And I, what I would tell them is you can carry the Texas flag any day you want when it saved your life.
Amen. That is a great story. And this is real, real combat experience.
True combat experience.
Yeah, real combat experience.
May I say one last thing?
You certainly may.
Okay. So what I'll say is that, thank you, though. If I ask the public, and especially ladies, do you feel safe today like you did 10 years ago? And I don't mean about walking out the front door. We all have this very unsettling, like guttural feel that we're not safe in the country like we used to be. And I think people point to the border a lot because we all look for something that we can point at. I would say that's part of the issue. The problem is that our country is changing. We're losing it through our fingers, right? And it's a very enormous national security problem. So it's China, it's Russia, it's Iran, it's the fact that Ukraine has occurred, right? And Hamas has occurred. I watched the official video that Congress was shown of 132 people being murdered in a 45-minute video. What I'll tell you is I've watched that for 22 years. That's ISIS. That's the Taliban. That's Al-Qaeda. That's Hamas, right? We have to do better in our country for our national security, and we must start making declaratory policies. If China does this to us in space, we are going to do this. If China does this to us in cyber, we will do this. We are not doing that. We have to change that, and Congress can change that.
I love every word you said. I would only say, I would add to that, I think this sense of angst among the American people, it is a great concern that significant portions of our government, mainly on the anti-American left, mm-hmm. they're not on our side.
Of course.
And I think that is a staggering thing for most people to process. They think, well, you know, we've always had different policies mm-hmm. on, you can, you know, litany of issues you can come up with, but it's not different policy thinking. It is or my husband's analogy in football, it's not between the 40 yard lines. It is this notion that has become more real or comprehensible to people. The current administration, the White House, is not on America's side. They're not trying to help the situation. The border is only the clearest and most vivid example. You can't look at the border and think, oh, they're trying to help. You can see they're trying to destroy the border. They have destroyed the border. Yes. And you carry that mentality. They're not trying to protect America. As for our foreign policy, as to the way they conduct the military, as the way they deal with Iraq, Iran, and the Ukrainian situation, China, it is an abandonment of defense of America. And that is why I'm thrilled to have someone like you running for Congress. Your military experience, your other experience in your work life have made you uniquely able and qualified to see the conduct of the left in those bigger terms.
Yes, ma'am. And we need to work together. But I will say that we are seeing evil in my mind, or it's exposed in my mind more than ever in my lifetime. And so we have some folks that are embracing the evil. This is a love America or hate America, right? To your very point. And we have to start electing people, it doesn't matter what party, that actually love America, right? And teach our children that.
Well, that's very nice of you to say both parties. I'm not, I will say, at this time, I only hear Republicans standing up. Maybe there are some on the other side, but the administration conducting the foreign policy.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm saying there's evil, and we need to start electing. I'm saying we need to elect the right people on both sides.
That's a true story.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, ma'am.
Clint Doris, again, for my happy listeners, it is ClintDorisForCongress.com. I love having candidates like this on board the show. I'm just thrilled he was available today. And I just wish you the very best in your campaign.
You. God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you for joining me.
May I
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. Okay, so our next plan here we have here today, we have two individuals who are running for Texas State House. And I say this quite often on my show, for people who are, you know, not in Texas, everyone thinks Texas, well, my gosh, it's a Republican stronghold. What are you even worried about? And actually in Texas, yes, we have Republican majority in the legislature, both sides, Senate and House, and we have Republican government. We all across, you know, the governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, all the agencies. But we have a lot of challenges in the state of Texas that are, they are within the Republican Party. There are challenges of how hard do we fight, how strong do we go. This is the kind of things we face. So our next guest, you can come on up. Our next guest joining me in studio is named Shelley Luther. And she actually, I'm going to guess half of America is thinking, I know that name. Yes, you do. Shelley Luther became kind of a heroine in Texas during the time of the COVID ongoing battles in Texas. We had a shutdown in Texas, which many people resented, which went on way too long. And she has, since that time, she spoke up. We'll hear her story about that in a moment. But she spoke up at that time, not just to challenge the shutdown in Texas, but even more broadly, to speak up and encourage other people to stand up and speak up against what many viewed as kind of growing government tyranny, failure to listen to the people. So we have joining us at this time, Shelley Luther.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for coming in. You know, I want to share a lot about your story. And it's, you've obviously, everything people see on Facebook about you, they're like, oh, they want to go to things that you're there because you become a really inspiring leading figure. You become a figure that says, you know, the citizens can stand up and challenge what to many people was just unjustified tyranny, even by a Republican government in Texas. So mm-hmm. you are running for Texas House. We're going to talk about your district in a moment. It's Texas House District 62, mm-hmm. and there's just two of you in the primary.
Right.
It's a beautiful thing. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I would love to have you start with just, I think our listeners know, but you reopened your salon at the time. It was a hair salon you owned mm-hmm. when that was not allowed. So just right. quickly tell that story, and why did you do that?
Well, it just actually sounds weird when you're saying it wasn't allowed, because it was just crazy that people could not go make money to feed their families. And what I think what the government was insinuating was, well, if you're essential, if you provide a service that everybody needs, but they didn't take into consideration what we were doing with our money after we made that as a salary, we were feeding our kids. And so I just am a normal person, you know, just an everyday person. There's nothing special about me, but I just knew that it was wrong. And so I told that liberal judge that I'm not going to shut the salon, and he put me in jail.
That is the most, I don't know many people have been to jail. Maybe you're the only one.
I don't know. I know. Any case. I know. And I'm the only person where I say I've been to jail and people cheer. So,
yeah, but that was, so a couple days in jail. And I think what it actually did, it brought nationwide attention to Texas, because in other states, a lot of citizens were compliant. They just kind of said, well, I don't want to be the one to rock the boat. But in Texas, people thought, we're the freedom state. People always think of Texas that way. Mm-hmm. And so your 2 days caused the then governor to say, to look, you know, kind of egg on his face, kind of saying, you know, I wish I kind of hadn't done that. So there was kind of, they rolled back things, and you did get out. So you kept mm-hmm. your salon open. Mm-hmm. And that was, I don't know how long it was open when other things weren't allowed to be open. How that
worked. So we closed, we closed down for about a month. And then after that, of course, I'm behind on my mortgage, and all of the people that worked in the salon didn't know what to do. And they looked at me and they're like, what are we supposed to do? And it was like a motherly figure type of thing. And I'm like, you know what? I personally am not going to be responsible for them not being able to feed their kids. So if they want to come work, I'm going to open the salon very safely. And if they don't want to come, that's fine. That's their choice too. But we're all grown adults. We need to decide which I thought everybody would know that.
Yeah, yeah. It is actually a freedom mentality, which I have to tell you, we moved to Texas in the year 2000. And honestly, we had been here just, I don't even know, a month. And my husband and I were both saying, I love this place. I feel like I came home. Yeah. Because that spirit of, it is freedom, it's entrepreneur, just kind of entrepreneurial spirit, mm-hmm. self-reliance, it just radiates in Texas. So it was a great thing. It was a great thing you did that. And
thank
ultimately,
you.
So it led you to kind of prominence about that issue. And it wasn't just, you know, the salon, it was the idea that I think what COVID did, along with other occurrences, COVID caused a lot of people to start to rethink, what is the government allowed to do? What are the limits on their power? And for many people, very quickly it dawned on them, that this should not be free to just shut down businesses, especially the more information that became available about, how dangerous COVID really was, how treatments worked, the more information the public got, the more unjustified all the shutdown was. So you became kind of a leader in that movement.
Thank you. Yeah, a lot of people were like, well, how did you open your salon? And it's a joke with my, team now, because I said, well, I just used the key. Because it was my salon. And then people were like, oh yeah. And I think you're right. We just got in this mode to where we just do what we're told every day, until it was just like, wait a second now. Let's just think about this for one second. Why are they able to close my salon down? That doesn't make sense.
Right. The what power the government really should have and versus does not have. COVID did a lot of things. I don't want to get way off in education, but COVID also allowed more parents to realize what their kids were learning in school. A lot of parents got the firsthand a dose of that and realized, wait a minute, this is what you're teaching our kids in school, critical race theory, LGBTQ advocacy to beat the banned denigration of America's founding principles. All of that it came to light because of COVID, because parents had their kids at home, which ties in with prior to owning a salon, maybe at the same time, you also have a history as a school teacher. Is that
I was
right?
a public school teacher for 13 years. And a coach.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you taught what grade or what?
So I taught high school, and I actually taught Spanish. I'm fluent Spanish speaker. So I taught Spanish, and I went to college on a softball scholarship. So I also coached some softball. I was a good teacher. I really was. I loved it. I loved the kids. I loved the parents. But the last year of teaching, it just all of that stuff that you were just talking about started mixing in with it, and it became more of a job and not just something I love doing. And so I retired and bought the salon, and that's how that story.
Wow, so I didn't even know that little sequence in life. I will tell you, I remember in high school, which was a while ago, but I do remember some teachers that all of us kids thought were cool. Well, there are very few, but there were a few. Mm-hmm. You were probably one of them. The kids thought, because you are, I'm sure you were demanding, and they had to do their job, they had to do the homework, but you have an engaging way. And so the kids probably thought, she's pretty cool.
Well, I mean, it's just mutual respect. I'm one of those teachers where I tell the kids, I'm like, you don't have to earn my respect. I give it to you. Now you can lose it. But when day one, I'm giving you my respect because you showed up here. You're doing what you're supposed to be doing. Perfect. But you can lose it.
That's a great, I'm going to steal that line.
Do it. You totally should. I'm sure I didn't make that up, but.
Okay. I really like that line though. So now though, turning entirely. So here we are in 2024 and you're running for Texas House. Mm-hmm. And I know the COVID shutdown issue has to be one, or just the larger point of how much power government should have versus what is held by the people. That's probably driving you. Are there other issues that are driving you to run for state house?
It's just, I never really paid a lot of attention to politics before all of this happened. So I think a lot of people that are not super political, once it personally affects you, that's when you're like, wait a second, let me just, what other things am I missing? And it was a lot. I was definitely, looking at the people that were, had positions in my community that said they were doing certain things. And then I'm looking as a teacher doing my research and going, no, you're not. No, yeah. You're not. And so I just don't think that they deserve a position in politics if they're going to come back and lie about what they're actually doing. And it's just everywhere.
It is everywhere. I will tell you, in the previous guest who was on, and you were sitting here in the audience and he was speaking, he made reference to the border issue and said, in Texas, we're not really doing everything we could. Mm-hmm. And I think that has really gelled for a lot of people recently. I mean, the good news is our governor has begun to stand up because the Biden administration has basically, they won a Supreme Court ruling saying that Border Patrol can come in and actually clip away, destroy the security at the border. And this following that, there was the governor made a declaration, I'm sure you're aware, last couple weeks, declaring an invasion, which, you know, it's a kind of funny thing. You're so glad, so you jump on board saying, this is great, it happened, except the authority to declare that invasion under the Constitution was there really the entire Biden administration. So I don't know, do you share the view that the state could have been doing more on securing the border before recently, before now?
I mean, honestly, I think that we should have built the wall. Like when Trump was in office, we should have taken all the money that we had and just put the wall up just in case. But I'm always someone that wants to be prepared in advance. I am proud of Governor Abbott, though, for standing his ground. It took a lot of guts for him to do that. And I'm happy that he's doing it. I mean, better late than never, you know?
It is better late than never. And I do think this is I don't want to say it's a precursor to a bigger problem, but this is really a stand down because the federal government hasn't backed down. They haven't, mm-hmm. I mean, they've got their Supreme Court ruling. They're saying, we're coming in, we're taking down the border. And the Texas is saying, no, we're actually going to continue constructing the barbed wire and the floating buoys. We're going to keep on working on that. So it is a constitutional, it could be a constitutional crisis.
Well, it's actually a little ironic because Governor Abbott is now sort of in the position that I was in. With opening, they were saying you need to open and we're going to put chains on your doors. We're going to do this. And I'm like, yeah, you're just going to have to do that. I'm not backing down. Okay. Now we're in court. I mean, and it's very ironic to me that the governor is actually, I mean, it's a bigger scheme of course, but it's exactly the position I was in. Say, okay, well make me is what it is at this point.
It is. Other things are driving a lot of candidates in running for state house this time. And I know the incumbent against whom you're challenging, there was a vote to impeach the Attorney General, Ken Paxton. Oh, I meant to say, by the way, you have a wonderful array of endorsements. I meant to mention those introducing you, which includes our Attorney General Ken Paxton, along with his wife, Senator Angela Paxton, Ted Cruz, our U.S. Senator,
yes.
Sid Miller, who's our Ag Commissioner. He was on the show a few weeks ago.
He's awesome.
And then Don Huffines, who was a gubernatorial candidate and state senator. So you've got some really strong endorsements, mm-hmm. and which I commend you. I congratulate
you.
Really...
I've never had the backing like I've had this time, and I think people know that I just won't go away. So maybe they just have to let me in office because I'm seriously just will not go away as long as people, you know, the representatives go to Austin, vote the way they are, come back and lie about it. I'm gonna run every single time if I have to.
Okay, those are really good. That's great to know. It's a great message. You know, I'm not going away. I didn't go away on the salon being open. I'm not going away if I don't win this thing. So I take it you did not agree with the impeachment of Ken Paxton.
I did not. I don't think that a person that we just put in office was elected into office and all of these things that he's, you know, described doing, he did that before we elected him into office. And it's our choice who we want in that office. It's not the House's choice.
This is actually that same line of thinking, strain of thinking I love, which is the people deserve. In fact, that's the premise of our Constitution. We the people, we are actually the sovereign. We're mm-hmm. in charge. And the people knew whatever the allegations are, whatever the merit to them or not against Ken Paxton, Attorney General Paxton, everyone knew them. And he won handily. He won. He beat out, I think there were four people in the primary.
He's the best AG in the nation.
Amen. He fights against the Biden administration. He fights on behalf of the people. And the decision by the Texas State Republican Majority House mm-hmm. to impeach him, it really sent a message to a lot of people that the Republican Party does not listen to the people.
No, they recklessly spend our money. And they should not do that. I mean, $42 million or whatever it was for nothing. For nothing. And I'm sure that, you know, if Ken Paxton were to be running again, he's not in this term, but I mean, like, he would get voted in again. And so I don't know what, it's just mindless to me.
Yeah, it is a presumptuous attitude, the kind of, you know, we, the elected, we know better than the silly people out there, the peasants, they're not really in charge. Mm-hmm. But so it was a real rebuke, I think, when the Senate would refuse to remove him, the Senate, you know, disagree with the House, and the House vote has really come back to haunt a lot of the incumbents. People just mm-hmm. saying, you know, we thought we were in charge, we didn't have to listen to the people. That's what that whole, you know, regardless of the merits of any of the issues of the allegations, the question was, in fact, Texas felt that way so strongly. It it's a state law. Mm-hmm. You cannot impeach someone for conduct that occurred prior to the most recent election. Right. And that law just sat there on the books, and everyone who voted for impeachment, which was a majority of Republicans or majority of the House, didn't seem to want to listen. So
I think what it did, though, it kind of made people that maybe didn't pay a lot of attention to what was going there. It's kind of like the moms with the kids' homework. It's almost kind of the same thing. Wait a second. If you voted for that, what else are you doing down there? Because they usually would just let someone come back and, it's the most conservative session ever is what they like to say. And then the people that really know what's going on, we're just like racking our brain going, no, they're lying.
You know what? Every single session since I've lived in Texas, after a House congressional session is over, they come back to their district. It's the line every time. Most conservative session ever. And there were some conservative advances. They weren't nothing. But when the conservatives have spoken and the legislature knows that we have a Republican majority, and in fact, I think in the district where you're running, it's a pretty solid Republican majority. Isn't that correct?
It's big time red. I mean, it's one of the reddest districts there are.
So the primary is the general, essentially.
Absolutely. No question. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's an amazing thing. So the Paxton thing, I think, was a huge, as I get, it's not so much just, Paxton is a stellar attorney general, best in the nation, no doubt.
Absolutely.
But it was also the mindset that those people who voted to impeach him conveyed. Mm-hmm. We don't really care what the people think.
Well, now they're, they can't defend the reason why they put Democrats as committee chairs.
That's the last issue I want to hit with you, and it is a huge issue. What is your thought about that? Because every Republican I've heard speak, every member of the Texas House, when they come and give speeches, all sorts of meetings will say, well, you know, I would have been happy with a real Republican Speaker of the House, but what are you supposed to do? The Democrats all band together, they pick somebody, they pick off 10 or 12 Republicans. That movie Texas Heist was all about this. They pick off 10 or 12 Republicans, and we get ourselves a Speaker of the House, time and again, who really forwards the Democrats' agenda, and he puts Democrat chairs in charge of very, very significant committees. Mm-hmm. How does that ever get changed?
I think that this gave us a great opportunity with so many grassroots Republicans running this time. I mean, if we can get 20 seats in there of people, regular people that just want to go and do the right thing without excuses, because right now they put those Democrats in those committee chairs so they can say, oh, it was a Democrat chair, so we couldn't get that passed for you.
We meant to.
Yeah, we wanted to. We just ran out of time, but we had time to criminalize beekeeping or something. It's just so dumb.
And that's a really good example.
It is. It's a real thing. Right. It's ridiculous.
Right. We find things. Okay. So last thing, I do want to again tell people your website, Luther, L-U-T-H-E-R, Luther, the digit for LutherForTexas.com, LutherForTexas.com. One of the most really just well-known candidates in the state of Texas because of the previous incident involving the shutdown and all that, and also your bravery. I noticed something. State Representative Jeff Leach had a statement up, I think it was at Christmas time, but he was basically talking about how kind of taking credit for, we got a hold of the power of the back in the people. We no longer live in fear or doubt of our freedom, thanks to bills this year that prohibit COVID-related closures and vaccine mandates. He's kind of taking credit for the Texas legislature's finally turning to protect the people. Did he help you when you were incarcerated?
Absolutely not.
Did he help you at any point in the?
No. I will tell you the people that actually did something. It was Chip Roy. It was Senator Cruz.
John Huffines, at least spoke about it.
He did, and Senator Bob Hall, and Don Huffines, and that's basically it. And Ken Paxton actually did speak out and was on the news for it. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But Leach, no.
That's interesting because there's a lot of that going around that now that, it's even worse than Monday morning quarterbacking. It's kind of like in this thing you thought you learned over, that's not what really happened. You know, it is just, it's the most amazing ability they seem to have to just generate a straight face of the camera and say, yeah, I stood up for that. We have it now. And they didn't do a darn thing.
I know. It just makes me do like, okay, whatever. Let's just get the right people in so we can get some stuff done. That's it. That's all I want.
There you go. So I am thrilled you're running for Texas State House. Again, we're speaking with Shelley Luther, candidate for Texas State House HD 62. I'm sure you need, as all candidates do, block walkers. You need
everything, poll greeters, poll watchers, block walkers, anything, donations. I mean, anything, we'll take it, please. We feel the momentum this time. I mean, our race looks really good.
I would think it would.
Yes.
I would think so. And again, Luther, L-U-T-H-E-R, LutherForTexas.com. Shelley Luther, thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you for joining me. And we have one more candidate, yay, joining us on the show today. And he's here in studio. His name is Darren Mice. And he is going to be joining us in 30 seconds. You can come on and have a seat. He is running for Texas State House HD 67, House District 67. And I wasn't going to go in great depth about this. However, I will tell you that he happens to be running in the seat currently held by Jeff Leach, the aforementioned Jeff Leach. So this is a race that involves a... you know, someone who's come to the attention of a lot of conservatives and a race where a person kind of took the wrong side of a lot of issues, at least in the mindset of conservatives in Texas, as to allowing for Democrat chairs of committees. What he did on the, I don't believe he was a big advocate for protecting freedom. He wasn't at all on the COVID issues. And he certainly was on board with impeaching our popular attorney general. But before I turn those issues, Darren Mice, I'm just going to tell you quickly, he was a former councilman for Allen City Council. Allen is a great community just south of where we live, Allen City Council. 30 years of business experience, leadership, and serving Collin County residents. And actually, at Kansas State University, he graduated in the aviation program. He worked as a flight instructor and charter pilot, so he's a pilot, which is fun. Not a lot of folks do that. He also transitioned a career, though, into consumer and commercial lending, became part of a group called Copart, a leading online vehicle auction remarketing provider, but basically continued raising revenues of over $320 million. So he's had business experience in Allen City Council, and here he is in studio. Let's welcome to the show Darren Mice.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for coming in. I know the campaign trail, I mean, I mentioned a moment ago, March 5th is like tomorrow almost. It feels like it.
It feels like it. It's coming up fast.
Coming up fast. And you are running you are running positively. However, there is an incumbent who is running for re-election in your seat, in the seat you're seeking. And, you know, it's a funny thing. I will tell you, this gentleman, Jeff Leach, is... for many people, he was viewed originally as a pretty darn strong conservative. And I think maybe early on in his time in the legislature, he was. But here we are, here we sit in 2024. He was a Paxton, you know, impeached. In fact, he led the charge and closing
That's
statemented
right.
the charge.
That's right.
Yeah, so he really went after him. Has just been kind of gone into the what feels like a uniparty swamp in Austin. And probably I'm taking all your talking points away, but why are you running for this seat?
Well, you kind of wrapped it up right there, so.
Sorry, please say it again anyway.
It's all about proper representation, right? And Jeff is just no longer representing the constituents of HD 67. And you're exactly right. So the first two, three sessions, when we first sent Jeff down to Austin, he was the conservative that we elected, and he did a good job. But the last two to three sessions, he's just turned into a different person, and it's obvious.
Is it in the water down there in Austin?
I don't know. It's I think you're there long enough, you just become influenced by outside dollars.
Well, that's probably an angle I want to talk with you about this election. This process I described a moment ago when we were you were here, I was speaking with Shelley Luther, why we have a Texas State House, a Speaker of the House, who's essentially chosen by the Democrats, even though he's got an R by his name, he gets the whole Democrat swamp, and then some Republicans would join on, he's got that seat. But it's not just that he assigns committee chairs, it's that he parcels out money, and he has an enormous fund of money. And so, you know, people, I mean, if you don't pay attention to politics, you say, well, so-and-so has been elected, re-elected four or five times. He must be a good guy. He's got any problems. But money plays a big part in that. And I don't know. Actually, I don't know the answer in this case. But the speaker's capacity to keep loyal Republicans to be reelected, he does that in part by money. So is that a problem in your race?
Oh, it absolutely is. So Jeff is part of that problem. He's accepted over $65,000 from Dade Phelan. And so what I've said many times, and I stick to it, I would like to make it a criminal offense for the Speaker of the House to give representatives money. You're simply buying influence. And maybe if that's not the immediate direction, then you flip it around and say, well, it's criminal to accept it, right, from the representative. So one of those two, but it should be, it's too much influence. You're simply buying and paying for influence.
Well, and in the case of the Speaker, Dade Phelan, you're perpetuating your own seat, your own power.
Of course, yeah. Those people will turn around and vote for him to be Speaker.
Again and again.
Again and again.
You know what? I have a massive printout that's safely at my desk at home. But the people who have received money from Dade Phelan over the years, even just in this current election cycle, it's pretty massive dollars. And, you know, I'll just, so to play devil's advocate, you know, people say, okay, so he thinks certain people are better legislators. He thinks they have been the most helpful, whatever he thinks. You know, why doesn't he have the right to do that? But you touched on it, but I want to really embellish it. What it does, it ends up causing the Speaker to hold on to his position of power and therefore in everything that goes along with it. And people who run to try to represent the people again are up against a wall of money.
It goes beyond the Speaker's money. When you look at, we'll take Jeff for example, because that's important to my race, right?
Yes, sir.
But you look at the funding that he's taken from certain PACs, TLR, Texans for Lawsuit Reform. He's accepted over $1.2 million since 2018 or 19. So when you accept that kind of money for a state House representative position, who are you representing? You're not representing the people back home anymore. You're representing the PAC, the group that gave you $1.2 million. And that's why he, in that particular case, he's been in support and authored several of 26 bills that TLR has supported, and some of them good, but 100% of the bills that they've supported, he's either authored or he supported. So money's a reality in politics because it takes a lot of money to run a campaign and get elected. But when you start taking it from the Speaker, from the governor, right? And I'll go from the lieutenant governor. Now we start having a conflict of interest.
Yeah, and you know, I only hear this secondhand, but Texans for Lawsuit Reform was reputed to be among the main behind-the-scenes players pushing the Paxton impeachment.
Yeah.
And I don't know all the details and why that was, but you know, you like to think in an issue as serious as actually impeaching the Attorney General of Texas, very popular with the voters, loved by conservatives, stellar, 100% great Attorney General, and you have an organization donating money and apparently orchestrating behind the scenes, you know, the people are the ones that get squeezed out of that formula. They're not being represented.
That's right. When you, well, and on the Attorney General, when you take the most conservative Attorney General in the entire country.
Sure.
And the most effective, he's sued the Biden administration, I think 60 times now. He's now defending the state, but he's been the most aggressive against going back to the Obama administration and now the Biden administration. When you try to circumvent the will of the people, the will of over 4.2 million voters, Texas voters, with a sham impeachment process, you know, it was a process that Jeff led. He was a House manager. He led the process. Dade Phelan was the mastermind behind all of this. Their hatred towards Ken Paxton, where it comes from, why it is, it goes back many years, and
yes,
it
does.
Just, yeah. But you can't. People aren't going to sit back and just accept people trying to overthrow the will of the people. Collin County's not going to sit back. I'm not sitting back.
Love that. And so what you have to do battling with that kind of money flowing around, and obviously the way you and I are describing this, and I think everything we're saying is clearly consistent with the facts, with truth, but you have the average Joe voter who is, you know, Jeff Leach, or the incumbent, looks like a nice guy, and, you know, we know his name, I don't know this other guy's name, and you get to the primary voting day, and you think, well, I've heard of him, haven't heard of him, plus he's the incumbent. And so that calculation for many people, if you're not paying attention, that calculation is enough to sway your primary vote. So your job, obviously, in this primary, is to get out there and try to expose all these facts to people, enough to the people so they realize there's some other choice, and that there's problems with the current representation.
That's right.
So how are you doing that?
So that's what a campaign's all about, right? It's about education of the voters and touching the voters. We're doing it from a volunteer basis because we'll get outspent 3-4-1, yep. Right? So that's the reality. We knew that going into it, eyes wide open. So that's not a surprise, and that's happening. But we have the most grassroots, incredible volunteer team for this campaign, and I will say, out of any candidate in Collin County, whether it's at the federal level, the state level, the local level, the support that our campaign, my specific campaign, has is unmatched. It's been just incredible. We have precinct chairs. We have 23 precinct chairs that in HD 67 that have endorsed my campaign.
Okay, I'm going to just interject one thing there in case you guys out there in America don't know how significant that is. Every state has this, I think every state has this, but you know, with the precinct is a small little geographic component of a House district of a state. And so you have a precinct chair means the Republican who stepped up and said, on this precinct, I'm going to knock on doors, I'm going to keep people informed. These are the people who understand the process, they are informed. So you've got precinct chairs in your own HD, I'm sorry, you said 23 of them?
Yes.
That is people who know what time
it is. They know what's going on. That's right.
They know what's, and yeah. So their job is helping you. They've got to get out there and tell their own little precinct group, the people that, I mean, it's an information campaign against a money campaign, kind of.
It is. Yeah. It absolutely is. And we have, we do have our endorsements from the Attorney General Ken Paxton, and if you look at, and I have them all listed on my website as well, but the local Collin County grassroots PACs, every single one of them has endorsed our campaign, and none are endorsing him. So it's the locals that are in the know, those precinct chairs that are in the know. There's a reason they're not getting behind the 12-year incumbent, and that's because he just doesn't represent them anymore.
Well said, exactly. I meant to say, I don't think I did when we first started. I want to urge you to go to Mr. Darren Meese's website. It's D-A-R-E-N, one R, D-A-R-E-N-M-E-I-S, darrenmeese.com, darrenmeese.com. I think, can you put the Chiron up there, Mr. Emilio? Yeah, there it is, right there. Okay, so it's HD67, it's darrenmeese.com. And you know, this is a, we have a couple of minutes still. I don't know other points you want to hit about your candidacy, like things, specific issues that drove you to run, you know, what you hope to accomplish down there. And now we have 1 minute to answer that.
Yeah, sure. So the border obviously is a big thing. And I think one of the approaches that I have in my professional world, I'll carry it into Austin, is that we need results-based solutions. Right. We have right now, they tout the $1.5 billion security, border security bill, right, as the greatest security bill ever passed. Well, maybe in dollar amounts, right, but when you look at the details of it, it's very vague. It can be security, it can be the wall, it can be 90% wall, 5% wall, 2% wall, right? It's non-specific, and that's what's failing Texans every single day. So I want to pass a law that says we specifically are required, the state of Texas is required to build our own border wall wherever it's geographically needed.
Amen to that. I had Sid Miller, our Ag Commissioner Sid Miller, on the show a few weeks ago, and he was very dismissive of the border security efforts of Texas. He really was saying, you know, in fact, I think his word was stunt. It's more like a stunt that's happening down there rather than the real enforcement. And, you know, I didn't lead him into saying that. I was trying to go along to hear what he thought, but he was very firm about saying it's not really an effort that should be made.
It's not.
That's not what's happening. So border wall, huge thing. We have like 30 seconds. Any other, I'll just say, let me encourage people to go to your website. I've heard you speak and crowds love you. I'm so excited that you're running. And I love that you're being able to articulate for people what change could really be happening and the concept of representation matters. It's the whole point of representative government. You're supposed to represent the people. So one quick parting shot, you want to share it with us?
Get out the vote.
March 5th,
yeah, we have early voting starts on February 20th. Go to darrenmeiss.com. Hit that donate button if you would.
Yeah, hit that donate button for all these candidates. Again, DarrenMeiss, darrenmeiss.com. Darren Meiss, thank you for joining
thank
me.
You so
thank
much.
You so much.
Thank you.
Great to have you. So to wrap up our show today, I'll give you a quick rundown of our upcoming Thursday shows. A week from today, we have Julie McCarty and Fran Rhodes. They are in charge of the True Texas Project. That is just a outside the Republican Party, amazing, relentless grassroots effort they engage in. I'll tell you, you'll hear from them. They're just lots of fun. Besides, following week, Rick Green, he was with us about 6 months ago. He founded the Patriot Academy. He can come back and tell us more about what they're doing. They inform Texans, Americans all over this country, famous Americans, members of Congress, members of Texas State Legislature and the House. When he talks about Patriot Academy, he's talking about what is it unique? Why is America unique? What does our Constitution provide? Why America is unique and why we have to stand up and defend it? You can't defend it and the structure of our country if you don't understand. Patriot Academy is a great guy. Following week, February 22nd, we're bringing in from Minneapolis, Liz Collin. She's the author of They're Lying to You. It is an amazing, in-depth story about a firsthand experience with a George Floyd event in Minnesota. She, the author of this book, Liz Collin, was a TV reporter who lost her job for telling the truth about what happened the George Floyd incident day. And her husband was the head of the police union, also lost his position for telling the truth about what happened on the George Floyd incident. They are behind the movie. In fact, she's the moderator of the movie on the same topic. I think the movie has a different name, but the book is called They're Lying to You. It is a truth, if more Americans knew, would change everything you think about our country and everything you think about Black Lives Matter, everything you think about the George Floyd incident. So those are our shows coming up. Well, thank you so very much for tuning in to America Can We Talk. My name is Debbie Georgiadis. The show is America Can We Talk. The website is americacanwetalk.org. I do the show to speak truth about America because America matters. And I will talk to you next time. Thank you again.
America, Can We Talk? Truth about America. Can you